Michael Hurley of the New England Sports Network, Boston native. He's been up all night. I don't even know if you're dressed now. Are you in your underpants?
Are you still? It was a struggle to find the pants left, right. I didn't know where to start. It was not a lot of sleeping last night.
You're still drunk. I remember one time I woke up. I had one shoe on with no socks and one shoe off. Couldn't find my pants. And,
Yeah, it's like that.
My shirt was ripped. You know what I call that? I call that a good night.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
Apparently that's what happened. That's what happened in Boston last night, Michael, right?
Oh, yeah. It's just a great day for the city of Boston. The last night was a great night. I think the best part, no one really saw it coming. If you said in December that they'd be the best team in the NHL, I don't think many people would believe you. So I think the fact that it came out of nowhere really caught everyone by surprise and really let everyone enjoy it as much as everyone did. And, yeah, not a lot of sleep last night.
But never mind the game. Have you ever heard of someone waking up without socks and one shoe? One shoe on and no sock. And a sock and no shoe on the other foot. It's bizarre to me. I think it's nuts.
It's a special night. It's a special one.
But, okay, tell me about the celebrations in Boston last night, Michael Hurley.
You know, they were pretty good. You never really know. So, you know, there's been a lot, obviously, in the last decade here in Boston with the Patriots, Celtics, and Red Sox. So they've all gone sort of differently. But the one last night really didn't seem like a lot of people trying to cause trouble. It just seemed like a lot of people happy and celebrating in a large crowd. You know, no one was really, there were a couple, you know, jerks that didn't really belong there and tried to flip cars or whatever, but they didn't really succeed. So for the most part, it was just joy and celebration. And I think it was really cool to see it play out that way because Bruins fans deserve this. It's been a long, painful 39 years for some of them. For other people, it's been their entire lives. And you could just see it, the way they were celebrating on the streets. It was just pure happiness, and it was awesome.
I thought it was an amazing game. Now, the first goal, you heard Lucic in the post game talking about how the Bruins were able to relax after that first goal, how important it was, and it was a big goal. Now, I'm not going to blame Luongo or Lalongo, as Cherry likes to call him. I'm not going to blame him for the Vancouver loss because they didn't generate any offense. You can't expect a goalie to have a shutout. You know, not everybody can be like Tim Thomas. But the first two goals, I believe, were stoppable. The wraparound with Marchand was a stoppable one. The first goal by Bergeron, where Bergeron was able to see the puck through those legs and get to it. But, you know, the net presence of Thomas, I believe if Thomas were in that situation on the first goal, he would have stopped it. You say what?
Absolutely, and I'm kind of surprised you're going soft on Luongo there in the first one because, you know, he didn't seem ready at all. The pass went through the slot, and I think he was thinking Recchi was the only guy there and just did not expect Bergeron to fire that one.
But Thomas would have stopped that first goal.
Absolutely, and you make a good point with the you can't win if you don't score, but if you saw after that third goal when Bergeron scored shorthanded, just the Canucks' body language just slumped. And we saw it here in Boston in the Philly series. When you know that you don't have a goalie behind you to keep you in the game, the players really have a hard time competing. And the way this series has played out has bared that out because you know that the team that scored first has won every game. But when the Bruins scored first, the Canucks have scored one goal, zero goals, two goals, and zero goals. So they had a lot of trouble fighting back once they let in that first goal. And with Luongo being as shaky as he was, you know, you don't know how that affected them. The Bruins relaxed. I don't know how the Canucks responded, but he put them in a hole. And yeah, Luongo, I thought of you when I
well, I was the, right. I was the only member of the sports media to be so consistent and so accurate with regards to Roberto Luongo. Everybody else hedged their bets. They really did. I was the only one who came out and said, this guy's a false god, he's a problem, he's not an elite goaltender. Okay, so the first goal, he wasn't set, the net presence wasn't there. The second goal, the wraparound, he was out of position and did what he complained that Thomas does. But Thomas, you saw the lateral movement of Tim Thomas, he would have got that wraparound, I believe, because we've seen him do it. And
he got it on Kessler in game six.
Let's talk about the third goal where it's shorthanded, Bergeron skating like the wind. He had a great game. And his forward momentum allowed the puck in the net. Again, we've seen guys go into Tim Thomas, but Tim Thomas is able to stand them up and plug the bottle, right?
Right. And, you know, it wasn't Bergeron's intention, obviously, because he probably would have scored had he not been hooked down to the ice. And, you know, I don't know why Luongo didn't have his paddle down. It almost as if he let up there for a little while, thinking on the power play he wouldn't be tested. And that was just the backbreaker. And all the Bruins needed to really have a good chance to win was kill that penalty. But instead, Bergeron scored, and that was it. It was the dagger. And from there on, the Canucks were, they knew they really had an uphill battle to score four times on Tim Thomas in a period. So now that was it. And I think it was Luongo losing his focus a little bit.
What did you do? Okay, where were you watching the game, and what was it like for you? Let's talk about your feelings.
I
know you're not supposed to have one. You're a sports journalist, quote unquote. You're not supposed to have feelings, but let's talk.
I'm a little, you know, I'm part of the modern media here. You know, there's no rule.
All right, good. Love that. So, where were you? How are you feeling? Let's talk about watching the game with Michael Hurley of the New England Sports Network.
I debated long and hard. I wanted to go into the city, but at the same time, a lot of the bars were filled up and not letting people in around 4:35. So it worked out. I stayed home. I stayed home with my fiance, my brother, his girlfriend. It was a small little family get-together, and it's the best way to do it. It's the best way to really take everything in and sort of absorb it the right way. And I'll tell you that the high fives, my hand is just getting over the pain of the high fives for the first goal, the second goal, the third goal, and the fourth goal, because God, the way they did it was just so impressive and so incredible, and it was almost a perfect game. So to witness it in the comfort of my own home, to really take it all in the right way, I really it was awesome.
It was amazing. So what did you think when that first goal was scored? What was going on? What was going through your mind?
I was just, I thought it was so perfect that it was Brad Marchand, and I'll get it out there, a good Halifax boy. You know, Brad Marchand made it happen. He jumped in on the faceoff that the Canucks actually won, did a nice twirl in the zone, found space, and laid the perfect pass to Bergeron. And it was so appropriate for Marchand to be the one, just because he's been, you know, he's been agitating that team and the fan base so long. So to do it there and get it started was just unbelievable. And from that point on, you just had to love the Bruins' chances to finish it off. And sure enough, they did.
Now, that first goal was huge, but it's still a game seven. So normal rules don't apply, because players try not to let the psychological aspects affect them. Now, you can say, well, that's not true, but you're able to fight through things better in a game seven, knowing that there's no tomorrow. So because the first goal is there, I don't believe that sealed the deal at all. The third one, I believe, sealed the deal. But I don't think that the first one did. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, looking at it now with a little bit of retrospect, it was clear through this whole series. The Canucks needed someone when they were faced with adversity to say, you know what, guys, get on my back. I'm going to lead you. I'm going to be the man here, and you can all follow my lead. And, you know, we talked about this with the Sedins the other day. The guy with the C needs to be that guy, and Henrik's not that guy. His brother's not that guy, and I thought you saw poor leadership when faced with adversity the whole series, and it really, you know, came to a head in Game 7. The two Sedins were a combined minus 8 on the night, so I think that tells you a lot, and I think the Canucks, you know, if they want to win a Stanley Cup, they might need another captain change. I really think that's the case, because whenever they were faced with adversity, they seemed to fold rather than fight back.
Well, you look at the Glimmer Twins for San Jose, who can't get the job done, Marlowe and company. There's a problem with that nucleus, I believe. There's a problem with the Canuck nucleus, because you don't have an embarrassment of riches in this parody-strewn NHL. So you sort of have to go with the girl that brought you. And that means sticking with a core of players that may not be able to get it done. I think Vancouver is in that situation. Look, President's Trophy winners, Chicago is a heck of a test. But Boston is not a gifted goal-scoring squad. Boston have had all kinds of offensive challenges, and they were able to prevail. Now, inserting Thornton, Sean Thornton, into the lineup in Game 3, that, I think, was a very important addition. I'd like you to talk about that, Michael Hurley.
Yeah, he is, and he was quick to tell everyone interviewing him on live TV last night that when the fourth line played eight or more minutes, the Bruins were 12-3 this postseason. So Thornton was quick to dish that one out and make sure the interviewers brought that up. And he's right, because they might have won that game last night. They played the first period. They played, I think they had 5 minutes, Paille, Campbell, and Thornton. And they've gone games where they don't play 5 minutes. So that tells you how well they were playing, how obvious it was that Julian stuck with them. And the work they did to keep the puck deep in the Canuck zone, to fire shots on net, because we know against Luongo that's not a bad strategy, to throw their bodies around, to just wreak havoc, was incredible. And Thornton was leading the charge. He was everywhere. He's flying around. They had a few shifts against the Sedin line, and they did such a great job of playing that physical game without drawing penalties, without taking penalties, without being undisciplined. And, you know, Thornton showed why he already has a cup. And, you know, he said today he got back to Boston, and they interviewed him. He said it's the best day of his life. So I think that tells you it's a little more fun to win a Stanley Cup in Boston than it is in Anaheim.
Well, Michael Hurley, the other issue here with Paille, Thornton, and Campbell, when you get the last line change and you want to get the Sedin sisters out against the fourth line, the fourth line were good enough and fleet enough and positionally thoughtful enough that they didn't burn the Bruins. So the delay with the last line change was nullified by the effective performance of Paille, Thornton, and Campbell. Your thoughts?
And even there was a shift, I believe it was the first period, maybe early second, but the Sedin line had a shift out there against Ryder, Kelly, and Sagan, and I thought, you know, this is a horrible, horrible mismatch. And sure enough, what happened, the Bruins kept it deep, and Ryder pinched it against the boards, allowed Seidenberg to get on the ice on the back end, and they just didn't do anything. And that's another instance where I see, you know, if I'm Henrik Sedin and I'm this great, talented, all-world, gifted goal scorer, and I see I'm out against a 19-year-old kid, you know, Chris Kelly, who's, you know, a good contributor but is far from a stopper, and then Mike Ryder, who isn't exactly known for his defense, and back-checking, you know, you've got to put the puck in and at least fire it on net. And that's the thing, the Sedins didn't even get any good shots. They had early on Henrik, but Seidenberg canceled him out by laying down. It was a great play. And they didn't even get good shots or chances. And I don't know how that happens. And it was just mind-blowing.
Okay, three game seven victories, winning in Vancouver, that's pretty good. But you see the psychological aspects of the game. And I think, am I wrong to assume that Vancouver as a team are more psychologically fragile than other teams? And I guess it's because of Luongo. But you could see them feeding off things or not feeding off things. Like Malhotra seemed to be dejected by his play when he missed some things. There just seemed to be a sense of hollowness with this team when faced with adversity. And I guess that lack of confidence or that fear was because of Luongo.
Yeah, it's a big part of it, and I think another part of it is, you know, you build your team with certain guys, and I think I might have mentioned this before. Max LaPierre was probably one of the most hated Canadians in his time there here in Boston. His style of play is just the style is just so hateable here. So, you know, you build a team around guys, you know, that can score and are all-world talents like Kessler and the Sedins, but then you complement them with guys like LaPierre and Burrows, and you put your eggs in that basket, and when it comes to crunch time and you need guys to man up and you don't have the guys to do it, it's not that surprising when you don't come up with a win.
I don't know. I was surprised, but I think that it really comes down to goaltending in this. If Vancouver was to get, look, if Tim Thomas was in net for Vancouver, they win.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, go ahead. Okay.
You could make an argument that the season Tim Thomas has put together was one of the best ever for a goaltender. Granted, he didn't play, you know, 75 games in the regular season. I think he played 55, somewhere along there. So he's definitely not going to get any consideration for that. But in terms of pure performance, to set an NHL record in save percentage and then to set all those save records in the playoffs and the finals, all season he's saved these guys bacon. There's been 3-2 games they've won. There's been 1-0 games they've won, and it's pretty much been because of Tim Thomas. And so you're right. I think whatever team had Tim Thomas this year was going to win the Stanley Cup. And it's funny because last summer any team could have had him if they were willing to give up a good player. Looking at Philly.
I know,
Philly.
That's amazing. Michael, can you stick around?
Oh, absolutely.
Michael Hurley of the New England Sports Network, Boston native. That's why we love him. Get some reaction from his city to his city's huge victory. What do you make of the a-hole fans in Vancouver burning cars?
I think it's terrible. Whenever that happens, it's so bad, and you don't want to, you know, throw the whole fan base under the bus because you never know how these things, who's really responsible. But when it's that many people, obviously a lot of the fans were involved, and it's really unfortunate. But I think it's worth noting that the Canucks fans in the building, inside Rogers Arena, were just, I was really impressed with them on a number of levels. One, their booing of Gary Bettman was for the ages. I thought that was unreal, just the way they booed him, and he was so mad he couldn't stand it. But then, you know, Thomas, when Thomas got his Conn Smythe, when Chara lifted the cup, they cheered, they stood and cheered, and the only people they booed were Boychuk for the Raymond hit and Marchand because he's Marchand.
But they cheered Thomas. They cheered Timmy Thomas.
Yep, absolutely, and I think they were great. And then the people at Rogers Arena that worked there, they played Dirty Water over the speakers, which is what they play when the Bruins win at home. They played Tessie, you know, a Boston song. So it was really cool to see, and it was just another reminder of how different and special the culture of hockey is. You know, there's so much respect for the cup, and when people see it in person, no matter which team wins, they're always in awe of the moment, and it's just so special. So,
Everybody stayed around, Michael, to see the cup. You know that, huh?
Yep, it's
crushed.
And, you know, what happened outside was terrible, but I was really impressed with what happened inside beforehand, and then all hell broke loose. But
as crushed as the denizens of Vancouver were, those in the building were not moving their seat. They wanted to see the cup, and that's very true. Now, the other thing, Michael Hurley, look, I mean, Mark Wahlberg, a Boston native who lives, of course, part-time in Los Angeles, and now is going to be living part-time in Toronto, just bought a condo here, close to me, actually. I've never bought for a moment. Well, I've got the little lean-to, actually, just outside, beside the guy who begs. I've never bought into this whole Canada versus the U.S. garbage. I mean, this is just phony. I know that we set this up, but does anybody out there at 1-888-666-0590, has anybody bought into this issue of Canada versus the U.S.? I just don't buy it or bring the cup home. I'm sorry. I'm not a believer. I'm not swallowing that Kool-Aid. There's more Canadians on the Boston Bruins than Vancouver Canucks. You know, Kessler is an American. Tim Thomas, whom I love, is an American. So who cares, Michael?
Yeah, it's a struggle here because obviously the biggest rival with the Bruins is the Canadiens. And, you know, the USA chants break out. And I think where it really stems from is the Montreal fans booing the American anthem 8 years ago.
Listen, this is a province that wants to secede, for God's sake.
Oh, I know.
Do you remember the year 1861 in America?
Oh, believe me, I don't believe that it's a good reason at all, but I think what it did was just confuse a lot of people that didn't really get into it. And, you know, we struggle with it here when we sit in the stands sometimes and the USA chant breaks out and you just look around wondering what people are thinking because, you know, Tim Thomas is American, that's great, but, you know, Patrice Bergeron won the gold medal against your American team. You know, Ryan Kessler was on that team and people break out in USA chants all across bars in Boston last night. I think it's just you know, simple when you just look at the sweaters, maybe you think it can be that simple. But
believe me, don't let Montreal fans, tarnish your image of this country because Montreal fans have booed the Canadian national anthem. Montreal fans have booed the Queen. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
now, look, there's a lot of great
moment.
There are a lot of great Federalists in Quebec. I'm not saying that the entire province is like that. But, you know, and French Canada has had some justifiable historical grievance with the rest of the country. So, but, you know, there is a history there. There is a cultural history there. So when you see Quebecers booing the American national anthem, don't take it too personally. They boo a lot of things in Canada.
Yeah,
so,
the U.S.-Canada thing, it's I don't ever see it going away either just because it's so simple to say it's Boston versus Montreal or Boston versus Vancouver. But, yeah, it is always a bit absurd. And, I know, it's cool that Thomas is the second American-born player to win the Conn Smythe. I didn't know that heading into last night. So it's really cool for America to get that guy in there. But, you know, it's a Canadian team and it's a Czech team and all that. So.
Ryan Kessler, an American, was crying last night. He was probably the most emotional because his team, the Vancouver Canucks, lost. So this is not a Canadian-American dynamic at all. I think that's a phony way to sell it. It's just hype. I guess it's a storyline the media likes to pursue in some quarters. But there's a lot of Boston fans here. A lot of people didn't like this coronation of the Canucks. There's a sense of wanting to cheer for the underdog anyway. and the best team won.
Yep, definitely. And I think a lot of things that might have turned people off was the style of play the Canucks used from the bite in game one right off the bat all the way through. And I think, you know, it was great that Yannick Hansen wanted to end his season with a cheap shot and then a cheap shot to a cheap shot on Ferentz when he wasn't even looking to just deck him, and then a low blow to Adam McQuaid behind the
ref's back. What about Chara? So. What about the shot on Chara?
I thought it looked like incidental contact. It looked like Higgins might have hopped up at the end, like he knew it was happening.
Of course
but
he did.
A lot of people here were fired up about that, but me personally, I think that's only because Chara was lying on the ice for a little while. I don't think it was. I really think it was.
I'll tell you something that nobody's talking about today, Michael Hurley, and I want the New England Sports Network. And could you please tell your friends that I said this?
Yes.
I believe that the refs last night wanted to even it up for Vancouver. I believe
really?
That the referees—they're not robots; they're human beings. They have emotions. They try and be objective. I questioned the penalties against the Boston Bruins. I thought they were bogus. Bogus. And I think the refs, maybe it was unconscious. Maybe it was overt. Maybe it was the moment. But the rationale for the call was irrational. There was no reason. It was absolutely arbitrary at a key moment. So I look at the call and I'm thinking, so many of these kinds of... this kind of contact hasn't been called. Why call it now? Where is the rationale for this call? And I saw another one, and I'm thinking, if I can assume that this call is arbitrary and irrational, what would motivate that decision? And I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, I think Boston got screwed with the calls. I think that there was referee bias. You say what?
It's funny because it's the same crew, O'Halloran and Welcome, that did Game 7 against Tampa Bay when certain members of the media thought that maybe it was biased the other way, that because they didn't call any penalties, which favored the Bruins over the Lightning in a big way. But I don't know. I'm slow to jump on, you know, the conspiracies that. But like you said,
it's
it
not
might
a conspiracy.
Not have been over it.
It's not.
Yeah,
no,
like
no.
You said.
A conspiracy
right.
is a methodical plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking
right.
about. You know, any kind of conscious, overt methodology. I'm talking about a feeling and a guy, a human being, makes a judgment call at an important time in a Canadian rink in front of 18,000 screaming fans and a national audience. And it looked to me like the refs trying to even up the game.
And what I always go back to before I make that leap, because it's certainly the evidence is there, but I always look at referees and I don't want to say the worst, but they seem inept a lot of the time. So many times they just make calls from preseason to the end of the Stanley Cup Finals that make you scratch your head and make you wonder what they're doing out there. And the hook on Lucic was definitely he had one hand on his stick. I don't know how that's a hook, but you know it's. That was definitely a bad one, but it was only two penalties. So, you know, maybe there was some influence because they are humans and there is a sort of desire to satisfy the 18,000 screaming people that are in your ear. But on the whole, I thought they did a good job of staying out of it. You know, only six penalty minutes handed out all game, and I think that's what we want to see in a Game 7. So I can't be too upset about them.
All right. Well, still, though, I'm not trying to be conversational here or controversial with a determination on the refs. I just found the call suspect. And if I were in Boston, I would be screaming blue murder. Here's a Canadian ref in a Canadian building in front of all kinds of Canadian fans. And I just didn't see the even up calls, which we know happens. If you can have even up calls in a game where a ref calls something that's questionable, so he makes an equal questionable call on the other side, I think you can even up calls in a game context as well. I think that principle still applies. So if you admit that principle exists with refs and their calls, perhaps you admit that as well in a game context. But anyway, it didn't work. Go ahead.
The Bruins ended up scoring more shorthanded goals, I believe, than the Canucks had on their power play. So maybe it was all part of the master plan with Bergeron scoring shorthanded. You never know.
Well, let me ask you about Craig, if I can. Sorry, Michael, if I can. Yep. Let me ask you about the stars for you. I thought Marchand was going to have a big game.
Mm-hmm.
Marchand did have a big game. your comments about the stars of this, Bergeron, Marchand. Bergeron, you know, seemed to be, didn't stand out, did a lot of little things that you don't really notice, but he really stood out in Game 7. And Marchand, the longer this playoff run went, the bigger he became as a Boston Bruin.
Yeah, Marchand's run really, he's sort of become a bit of a folk hero here because at the beginning of the season, he was an unknown, scratched his way onto the fourth line by being that little, you know, that little irritating guy. And it turned out he had a ton of skill in that little body of his, and he really had a chance to show it off. He was unbelievable, just absolutely everywhere, doing everything you could ever want a guy to do, and he's the smallest guy on the ice, which is always impressive. And Bergeron, like you said, he's always doing those little things, and he'll never lead the league in goals or assists, but he's one of the most valuable players a team can have. Just what he does in the faceoff dot, what he does defensively, how smart he is offensively. That's why he's not, you know, he's not a Sedin, he's not this sniper, but he's so valuable, and he's just such a big reason why they win. And then, you know, on top of that, you have such a young nucleus that looks like it's going to be together with Krejci, with Sagan, with Lucic, Marchand and Bergeron. And, you know, it's a really good time for the Boston Bruins right now. And to get this win right now, and so many of those young guys have such great playoff experience already. They have 5 Game 7s, you know. So it's a really good time for them. And you're right, it's not the superstars that you see, you know, every night in the highlights, but it's a great winning core.
Seidenberg really came into his own. There were some question marks about this guy as a defender, but I think that the guy really, really grew into his role. His development has been very strong.
Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who's not too old either. And he's a guy that Peter Chiarelli got for absolutely nothing. He got Seidenberg for nothing, and he got Recchi for nothing. And those guys have been huge contributors. Seidenberg, you could make the case, was the most valuable defenseman they had, even as great as Chara is. Seidenberg was right there.
He was very good, and he had good point shots, too.
Yeah, and he made great decisions to pinch in, to keep the puck in the zone, which against Vancouver is just supremely important. And, you know, even last in April against Montreal in that series, there were questions about him. He was making some mistakes. People said, you know, this is kind of scary. And then since then, he's been an absolute rock. His play to sell out and lie down in front of Henrik last night to prevent that scoring chance was huge. And then later when Chara got the glove save there, Seidenberg was the one again on the ice, preventing Burrows from getting a shot off and really disrupting him. So sort of unsung moments, and it's exactly what he's done all playoffs long. And he's been, you know, if not the MVP, he may not be the MVP, but they wouldn't have won without Dennis Seidenberg.
Talk to me about Mark Recchi, Michael Hurley, if you can, please.
He's been just, you know, he came here a couple years ago, and it was like, okay, you know, they got Mark Recchi. Guy was cut from Pittsburgh a couple years ago and didn't expect a lot from him, to be honest. And he's been such a pleasure to watch play. I've learned to respect his game so much. He's 43 years old, and he's getting bundled, just absolutely knocked around. But he takes it. He holds his ground in front of the net. He's tipped in so many goals and rebounds that it's how he works. And he brought an element of toughness to the Bruins that they just lacked. They lacked someone who said, "I'm going to go to the dirty area. I'm going to get clocked in the mouth, but I'm going to hold my ground, and I'm going to get this goal. I'm going to do what it takes. I'm going to pay the price." And it really led these guys. You know, Char is the captain, but they needed more leadership, and Recchi was exactly what they needed. And, you know, he may be fading out a little, but, you know, to go out on top, it's perfect, and it couldn't happen to a better guy, a better player.
5 seconds. How important was it to make this Game 7 like an emphatic victory, like 4-0? This is another spanking.
Oh, perfect. Just absolutely perfect, and the city couldn't have enjoyed it any better. Get rid of the stress, and let's start celebrating in the second period.
Michael Hurley, thanks so much, buddy. I really appreciate your work. You've really helped out. I'd like to bring you back tomorrow, too, if I can. Michael Hurley of the New England Sports Network, Boston native, joining us to talk about the reaction in his city after that incredible Stanley Cup win.